You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Captain Charles Boycott was the name of an estate manager in Ireland in the late 19th century. He worked for an absentee English landlord, and in 1880 the Irish tenants demanded a reduction in their rent, but Captain Boycott not only refused, he evicted them. In response, everyone in the locality ostracized the captain, refusing to have anything to do with him. 3 months later, faced with continuing total isolation, Captain Boycott abandoned his job and withdrew to England. Henceforth, his name became a well-recognized verb, adjective, and noun. Boycott South Africa was the slogan of those fighting apartheid, and today those fighting for justice for Palestinians have been organizing a boycott campaign. To explore the tactic of boycotting, I'm joined on the phone by Gordon Murray. He's an organizer in Vancouver with BIAC. BIAC stands for Boycott Israeli Apartheid Campaign. Good morning, Gordon, and welcome to Red Eye.
Hi, Mordecai. Thanks for having me.
In the case of South Africa, what circumstances made boycott an appropriate response?
Well, I think there's a few things that are important in a boycott campaign. And first and foremost, the oppressed / indigenous people need to call for a boycott. I think that's actually the most important condition, is that it's not people outside imposing it upon a situation, but the people who are at the core of the situation calling for the boycott. So that's number one. Secondly, a very clear demand and a very clear message. And in South Africa, it was one person, one vote. And obviously, also a situation where there is some vulnerability to international pressure. So, an economy that's dependent on imports and exports helps as well. But that's really secondary. I think the first two are the most important ones.
And how would that compare with the situation in Palestine and the boycott campaign that's being organized there?
Well, I mean, they've stated, the Palestinians, first of all, the Palestinians have called for a boycott. In 2005, 170 Palestinian civil society organizations, everything from unions to women's groups, political parties, all got together to call for an international campaign of boycott, divestment, and sanctions, actually based on the campaign that brought justice to South Africa. They specifically mentioned that in their call. So that's one of the important elements. Secondly, again, the demands are very clear and very simple. They are calling for an international campaign of boycott, divestment, and sanctions until Israel complies with international law. Now, that is a bit more abstract than one person, one vote, so they've actually broke it down into three key elements. The first one being that Israel withdraw from all occupied Arab lands. The second being that Israel respect Palestinians' right of return as enshrined in UN Resolution 194. And the third being that all Palestinian citizens of Israel be given equal rights. So those are the three key demands, all of which are based on international humanitarian law.
What made the boycott campaign of South Africa effective?
Well, I mean, we see it today as being an effective campaign, but in fact, if you look at the history, it took 25 to 30 years before it really began to bite. I mean, it was originally floated in the 50s as a campaign, and it didn't really gain any international traction until the Sharpsville massacre. But it wasn't. I mean, it didn't actually come to fruition until 30 years later, when Nelson Mandela was released as the beginning of a process that led to one person, one vote. So Yes, it was effective, but it took a long time for it to be effective. And a lot of that was not because, I mean, certain governments, including the Canadian one, tried to take credit for having pushed the boycott campaign, the sanctions campaign against South Africa, but that's really revisionist history, because the campaign itself was spearheaded and pushed by civil society, by individuals, by groups, small groups around the world, and the governments only came on board very lately. In fact, Canada was involved in voting against sanctions at the UN as late as 1980. So the fiction that this was a worldwide, government-led, UN-led campaign is somewhat of window dressing. So it was effective. It was an important element. But if you talk to South Africans, they say that all of the aspects of the struggle were important, including armed struggle, the boycott campaign, and civil disobedience.
I'm old enough to remember the South African apartheid campaign, starting with an effort at a consumer boycott of South African oranges being marketed in Britain at that time. But it was a campaign that ended up covering the full scale, the full social spectrum of cultural, sport, academic, economic. Is that something similar to what the Palestinian people are calling for?
Yeah, yes, that's exactly right. And as I mentioned before, they've specifically modeled it on the South African campaign. And there is a cultural boycott element, which includes asking cultural figures not to go to Israel to accept prizes or give concerts, and as well as an academic component of the cultural boycott, which involves isolating Israeli educational institutions that are complicit in the occupation. And there's a vast store of evidence about how Israeli educational institutions are involved in laying both the judicial and the philosophical groundwork for Israel's military occupation. So that's one aspect of it. Sports is another aspect, although that's just kind of that. So far, that has not been organized on an international scale. It's been more anecdotal with various countries, and when Israel was playing in Turkey, there was the crowd was against them, and so on. So that's starting, but again, it's very early. The initial call by the Palestinian civil society was only 5 years ago, and so a number of prominent South African activists, anti-apartheid activists, have said that it's quite amazing how far the Palestinian campaign has come in 5 years compared to the South African campaign. They say that it took South African boycott campaign to go 25 years to get as far as the Palestinian campaign has in five.
You mentioned with regards to the campaign against apartheid and the boycott campaign in South Africa that there was one of catalyzing events was the South African government massacre of peaceful black African demonstrating in Sharpeville in 1960. Is there anything that you see as playing a similar catalyzing role so far in terms of mobilizing wider support for the boycott campaign against Israel?
Yeah, certainly. Israel's assault on Gaza last year has had, a dramatic impact on the boycott campaign. It was gathering steam anyway, but it just the naked aggression of that Israeli assault, and essentially, it wasn't a war; it was a massacre. I mean, if you look at the figures, 99.7% of the civilian casualties were on the Palestinian side. So that's not a war; that's a massacre, plain and simple. And despite Israel's attempt to censor information about it, there were a few brave reporters, mostly from Arabic news channels like Al Jazeera, who were in Gaza getting images out, and ended up getting out at least to a limited extent to the world, and people were shocked and outraged at what they saw, and that definitely has catalyzed the campaign. And since then, there's been, for example, in the States, there's already three campuses in the U.S. that have voted for calling for divestment campaigns. And again, that took over 20 years in the South African experience. And so that's already a well-established campaign. And a number of unions and pension funds around the world have started divestment. Not just voted on divestment, but actually have taken steps, including the largest public sector union in the UK and the largest government, the main government pension fund in Norway, and so on. So, these are large movements already in this campaign in these early days.
You had mentioned that things always look a bit easier from the present, looking back at the past, and the South African campaign for boycott of apartheid really took a long time. And today, people don't seem to remember, I think, that was the era of the Cold War, and one of the obstacles that the South Africans faced was smearing as that it wasn't racism that they were fighting, it was really they were communists. Mandela was called a communist, etc., as a way of trying to isolate them. Is there a parallel here with that smear campaign as well?
Yes, of course. The Israeli government has worked very hard to put the occupation under the rubric of the war on terror, and so they claim that they're not fighting a national liberation movement. They're fighting terrorist organizations, and that's patently not true under international law, but that's what they're using as their justification, and certainly Western governments have bought into that because they're extremely vulnerable on this issue, having committed war crimes themselves in their so-called war on terrorism, and so that's enabled, I think, up till now, the Israeli government to really act with impunity towards the Palestinians, because Western governments are very loath to criticize it for a number of reasons, but I think that's certainly, given the outrageous nature and the incredible escalation of Israeli violence against the Palestinians, I think that's an important element, the demonization of the Palestinian resistance as terrorists and the denial of it that it's a national liberation movement. Has had an effect, not so much on world opinion and individuals, but on the lack of government action on divestment and sanctions, and so that's why it's even more important. I mean, in South Africa, there was a UN very early on. The UN called for sanctions against South Africa, so in that. That did have an effect, but in the Palestinian situation, because there is a lack of will and a blockage of most UN movement by U.S. vetoes, certainly at the Security Council level, it's even more important for individuals and groups, civil society, to take on the campaign boycott, divestment, sanctions against Israel, because of the lack of institutional support at this point.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to talk about us, and I'll refer people to the BIAC website as well for more information. Thanks, Gordon.
Okay, thank you very much, Mordecai.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Gordon Murray. He's an organizer in Vancouver with BIAC, which stands for Boycott Israeli Apartheid Campaign. And if you want more information on their work, go to their website, boycottisraeliapartheid.org.